This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the United States sends more and more troops overseas, tearful partings between soldiers and their families have become a regular feature on the front page and on the 5 o'clock news. But the loss of 11 soldiers in a helicopter accident at Fort Drum yesterday tragically illustrates the constant demands that life in the military places upon the wives, husband, and children of armed service members. Today, we want to hear from military kids, from the wives, brothers, sisters, and parents of service members. What are the tough issues for you, and is it particularly hard to be a military family during this particular moment in American history? Our telephone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with a call from Kathy, who's with us from Athens, Ohio.
Yeah, hi. I have several younger cousins who are being sent to Iraq, and they have children. And I know they're struggling with talking to their own families, to their own children, about the possibility that they may inadvertently kill children in Iraq. And I'm wondering, you know, within the military, who do they talk to about those sort of fears and concerns?
How did that particular concern come up?
I asked them.
Yeah. And they talked. They said that they had been talking with their kids about that?
No, they hadn't.
Ah, I see. So they were worried that this would become an issue that they're... How old are their children?
Well, I'm actually, there's three kids in one family, and I think they're all below 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are two teenagers in the other family.
But that's one of the things that little kids especially always ask about is what about kids over there?
Yeah, and then there was a program that NPR did a while back where, I can't, it was on a Sunday, where the interviewer had three people going into the military, and they all had families. And when the interviewer asked them that question, none of them really could talk about it.
Has the issue of politics come up as well?
Oh, absolutely.
And what's the situation with not only your cousins, but do you feel torn with them possibly over there and the situation here?
Well, we stand on different sides of the issue without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But I have concerns about their, their ability to deal with that, and also how do they morally balance that in their own lives and live with it, quite frankly.
Yeah. Plus, of course, the basic fears of what might happen to them.
Right. And then the other day I was at a rally, and there was a young man standing off to the side who was kind of shouting at the rally. It was an anti-war rally. And he was from the Naval Academy in Annapolis, and I went off to the side and began to talk with him. And he was so fearful that someone might take his picture or get up close to hear what he was saying. But he had huge questions about possibly being sent and about the legalities and the righteousness of this potential war. I mean, he was really struggling. And I asked him, I said, have you talked to anybody about this? Is there anyone to talk to about it? And he hadn't.
Well, Kathy, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
And I wish your cousins well.
Yeah, thank you.
Last week, we got an email from Amanda Mahar, whose father was called up to the service last month. She joins us now from Little Rock, Arkansas. Amanda, thanks very much for writing us and for being with us today.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about your family situation.
My dad has been in the military in the reserves for 30 years. He's a lieutenant colonel, commander of a battalion. He's never been activated or mobilized, and so this is kind of a little, thrown into it, and we didn't, we don't really have a place where this has happened before. Kind of new to all of us.
Where is he now?
He is in Texas at Fort Hood.
So he's training at this point.
Right. He's training now, which is actually okay as far as it's sort of easing us into the coping, because I can still talk to him. He has a cell phone, so we can still talk to him.
But your family, I guess in a way, if this is the first time in 30 years, I mean, it's almost like an instant military family.
Right, right. I mean, he's been in the military, all my life, and I've always seen him, in army clothes, but he's always had a normal job. You know, he was a teacher for years, and so it was just something he did on the weekend.
What's hard about this?
I think what's hard is dealing with my mom. My mom's never had to do, you know, had to be separated from him other than, you know, of course, basic, and then they have the once a year. And I think probably the hardest thing is the unanswered questions. We don't know where he's going, mm-hmm. when, you know, how long he's going to be there, when he's coming back. So,
I want to read what you wrote to us in the email that you sent last week. Quote, I feel if I support anti-war, I am not supporting my dad and his troops, and I was wondering if anyone else had that same feeling. When did you start thinking about that, and was there something that prompted that thought?
I went to a reading of a Greek play that was going on all over the world.
This Lysistrata?
Right, Lysistrata, and before the play actually started, they came up and someone said, we're going to have a anti-war rally, and I turned to my friend. I said, I don't think I should be here. I feel awkward. You know, it's almost like it's two different things, you know, and not that I'm for war, because I think everybody, you know, for the idea of war is against it, but it's almost like once we're going, we should all be behind our troops.
A lot of people feel that way, yet a lot of other people feel that, you know, that's the most important time to stand by your principles. Amanda?
Well, yeah, oh. I've actually talked to a lot of my friends and just recently, and everyone feels the way, pretty much the way I do, as far as I can tell. They don't want to go to war, but they say that they probably wouldn't participate in an anti-war rally, even though they're basically against it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't even understand what actually we're doing over there. You know, I don't think that a lot of people understand what it's about.
Amanda Mehar, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Amanda Mehar joined us from Little Rock, Arkansas. And again, we're talking about military families. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or like Amanda, you can send us email. The address is TOTN@npr.org. Our next caller is Wendy, who's on the line with us from Burnsville, Minnesota.
Hi, I'm enjoying the program, and I look forward to hearing the rest of it. I just wanted to speak a little bit to the perspective of family members of Guard and Reserve soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Like Amanda, who was just on with us, yeah.
Probably the biggest challenge is that you're so isolated because you're not around a large population of other military families, and it's very difficult for children. I have four children who are elementary school age and junior high age, and they have a tough time with the whole political aspect, hearing their teachers talk about their political view and yet knowing that dad's going to have to go serve his country and understanding what his job is and trying to reconcile that as a child.
Their dad is in the Guard?
Yeah, and he's going to be, his unit is actually going to go be part of a Bosnia mission,
mm-hmm.
peacekeeping mission. Here in just a few months they leave, and so we've been preparing for quite a while for his deployment. Also, there are great programs in the military community to help families be prepared and be ready for those situations, and families really need to be proactive and take advantage of those opportunities.
Are there any in particular that you found helpful?
I think each unit tries to have what we now call readiness groups. In the era of Desert Storm, we called those family support groups, and we really changed the emphasis to teaching classes and doing things that help families learn how to prepare for lengthy separations. It's a fact of military life. And so you make sure that you understand your family's finances, and you can step in and run those without it creating a huge hardship. And you understand what community resources are available to you if you need counseling or if you need educational support, that you can find those resources and access them for your family.
And when is your husband set to go?
Midsummer.
Midsummer, so you have some time to prepare anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck to him, and good luck to you too, Wendy. Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Joining us now by phone from Panama City, Florida, is Meredith Leyva. She's the founder of SyncHouse.com, a website for military wives. SyncHouse.com, first of all, Meredith, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil. Neil.
Sinkhouse.com. It's spelled C-I-N-C House, and that name comes from, I assume, the acronym for Commander-in-Chief.
Yes, Commander-in-Chief of the House. That's jargon for military wives, but we're also a site for women in uniform.
Now, you are a military wife, or were?
Yes, I sure am. I have been for 6 years now.
What was the transition like when that happened to you?
You know, it was really tough, and I'll tell this story on my girlfriend, Marianne. When my husband first joined up, I was, what I thought to be a highfalutin corporate executive in downtown Washington, D.C., and my girlfriend, Marianne, threw the first party of our unit, and when I met her and the other girls there, everyone was just incredibly nice, and I was sitting there thinking, oh, how unbelievably naive and silly these women are, and it was a huge mistake on my part. As it turned out, Marianne's first experience with the military was she had gotten married 2 days later, moved to Japan, and her husband deployed 2 days after that, and she was left to find a house, a job, and transportation in the middle of Tokyo. And this is the kind of independence and adventure that these women are, and I think that's really important. Military wives today are not the World War II sweethearts that everyone likes to think of. These are career women, and they're also mothers of young children.
Maybe we want to reconsider our image of World War II sweethearts, too.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, what kind of demands does military wives put on spouses? What kind of services do they ask you about?
Well, what kind of demands do military wives put on Sinkhouse?
Mm-hmm.
Military wives come, and women in uniform come to Sinkhouse to answer the questions that the military has, as an employer, has a hard time answering, as any employer would. For example, how do I keep my marriage together despite a 6-month deployment? How do I explain to my kids what my husband is doing? How do I relocate my family to Korea? All of these sorts of questions are really very, very stressful on military families as a whole. And so we try to provide what we call the unofficial scoop on military life and help them get through the stressors so that we can actually get on with the adventures of military life. And that's how we view it.
Let's take another call. Our next caller is Allison, who's with us from Fairfax, Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a military wife, and I am the sibling of two military officers, one who's serving in Qatar right now. My father was in Vietnam and a career officer, and my grandfathers were officers in World War II, and my great-grandfather was a Medal of Honor winner in the Boxer Rebellion.
So this is a military family tradition.
Yes.
What is it like for you with your... obviously, you expect it. You've grown up to expect it.
Yes. I chose it. I chose to marry into the military, and two other of my siblings of the five of us chose to go into the military. We like the lifestyle, and they're all philosophers and historians, and the ideal of potentially putting your life on the line for freedom is very important to all of them.
We are talking a lot about stresses, anxiety, separation. What is it about the lifestyle you like?
That I've lived all over America, that when other people talk about their hometown, I can probably say that I've lived real close to it, almost everyone. I've lived all over the country. That's fun.
There's also a great deal of camaraderie, isn't there?
Yes. Yes, there is.
Well,
you can immediately blend with other military brats, military wives. That's what I would choose.
Well, we wish all of your family members the best, and thanks very much.
Let me give a piece of advice.
Sure.
For the four-year-olds, for some reason it's hardest on the four-year-olds, and faith helps a lot, and I told my little four-year-old niece, Allison, when she has expressed a lot of concern about her mother who's serving in Qatar right now, and I told her she had a guardian angel, and she couldn't believe there were angels in the desert, and that has helped her through.
Allison, so, thanks very much for that.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more with military families. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with families of service members about coping with a life tied to the military, the pluses and the minuses. Our guest is Meredith Leva, founder of a website for the wives of servicemen. Are you learning to cope with having a loved one deployed overseas, or have you been through this before and have stories to share? You're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Meredith Leva, we heard earlier from a caller who said, unlike the woman we just heard from, as the spouse of a reservist or a member of the National Guard, it's a little harder.
It's very much harder for Guard and Reserve families, I think, because a lot of families don't understand that when a service member goes off to play G.I. Joe on the weekend, that that's actually very real. And the reality of deployment for him is very real, especially in this day and age, as the American government relies more and more on peacekeeping as a diplomatic solution instead of the last resort, which is what it used to be. And so as a result, these families aren't prepared either logistically or emotionally. Logistically, you need to have an amazing amount of paperwork in order. For example, you basically cannot do business with the military or pretty much with anyone else on your service member's behalf if you don't have a power of attorney that lays out specifically what you are allowed to do. For example, you cannot call up a credit card company to find out the balance on his credit card and pay it off if you don't have that power of attorney. Emotionally, it's very difficult for most civilians to say, oh my gosh, my husband or my wife is leaving me for 6 to 9 months. And in fact, we don't know when he's going to come back. And not only is it hard on the spouse who's about to become a single parent for that whole time, but how does she then talk to the kids about this? So I think it is much harder for Guard and Reserve.
How well do the services, and particularly the Army, deal with these kinds of demands? Or are they useful?
You know, I think the military deals with these demands as much as they can as an employer. I think there is more that they can do. They do quite a bit of pre-deployment briefings and have these wonderful family readiness groups. But the trick is that the family has to actually want to be involved. They have to be able to show up. And that is very difficult, again, because emotionally a lot of spouses are sort of rebelling against the military system.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's just logistically difficult. If you are a working wife, and most active duty and Guard and Reserve spouses are, and you got young kids, you know, you can't just leave your job in the middle of the day for a pre-deployment briefing or for a spouse readiness luncheon. Who's going to take care of the kids? So there's a lot of logistically difficult issues as well.
Let's go with Melody, and Melody's on the line with us from Durham, North Carolina.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I have a brother who is currently stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado, and he's a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. And his helicopter's already there. He's all packed. He's probably going to leave within the next couple of days or next week or so.
And by there, I assume you mean over there.
Yeah, he's going to Kuwait.
Yeah.
And also my fiancé's brother is currently there, too. He's been there about 2 months now.
Huh. It's awfully hard to see people heading out to the unknown like that.
Yeah, it is. And I think the hardest thing for me is seeing with my brother, I guess him being in a situation potentially where somebody is actually trying to kill him. You know, if we end up going to war. And also things like, you know, it seems like every few months a helicopter crashes, and he's been personally known three of them that have crashed and had several of his friends in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it could just as easily be him.
Yeah, and this is a dangerous business even in training.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You talked about the difficulty of, you know, facing the situation where somebody might be trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Has he talked to you at all about the difficulty of being put in a situation where he may have to kill people?
No, he hasn't said anything about that. And the only thing he said to us, and I kind of have a feeling he's just sort of sugarcoating it, is that he's going to be responsible for flying around food and people, and that we shouldn't worry, and he's going to be... But I know he's just saying that to make us feel better.
Yeah. You also have to think in this context, you know, chemical, biological, there's a whole lot of things that could
happen. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that, you know, and I don't think, I don't know that he even agrees with the whole situation, but there's just no way he's going to say that. He's very much a patriot and you know, did this because he wants to serve his country, and there's just no way he's going to make it known that he feels differently. He's just going to suck it up and do it.
Yeah. Well, we wish him all the best.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Meredith Leyva, you know, there's a lot of the military culture where, like she was talking about, where you just don't talk about your fears.
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. I'll be very honest about that, because you don't want to scare family members and friends who aren't real familiar with your training on a day-to-day basis. Most active duty spouses understand this is the best trained military in the world. To be honest, a lot of Guard and Reserve spouses aren't that confident because this is the same bungling husband who can't figure out how to work the lawnmower at home.
Right.
So you have a lot of fear. It's also a very different situation this time with that threat of chemical and biological weapons attacks, and that is brought home when the guys are getting their anthrax and smallpox shots. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but some of the vaccinations, if you get them, you cannot be near your family for 21 days if you know, under certain circumstances.
For fear of triggering reactions. Yeah.
Exactly, and spreading it to your family, especially if you have children under the age of one. So, you know, we're very familiar with that kind of stuff, but we're also see sometimes these guys in action, and I have very much confidence in my own husband, but I know other wives who aren't as confident.
As you know, there's a lot of debate going on in the general public about, you know, why we're there, what we're doing. Has that spilled over onto your website?
You know, it really hasn't, and for good reason. It is very much ingrained in the military that the service members are not to be involved in politics, and it's really kind of frowned upon even for the families to be too involved in politics. And the reason for that stems down from really the founding of our country. Generally speaking, when you have a politically active military, there are a lot of military coups, and to prevent that, there are regulations against political activism. Having said that, I do think that active duty military families, forgive me for saying this, but have a much more realistic view of the world because we tend to be world travelers. When you travel abroad, it is very clear that the rest of the world can be, very frankly, a lot more barbaric than we are. There are much greater proclivities to violence. And if you want to talk about sexism in the world, all you have to do is walk outside the country, and you will absolutely praise America for the leaps ahead that we are of so many other countries, including those that we consider to be first world Western countries.
Well, joining us now on the line is Frank Gomez, who's principal of Santa Margarita Elementary School, which is on the base at Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California. He spends every day with the children of service people. And Principal Gomez, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
This is a public school. Almost all of your students, though, have parents in the military. Are there special challenges that poses?
What we find is, and it's much of what Meredith was saying, is that our students are ones where, in this particular situation, there are some unknowns out there, and it's deployment looks different and it feels different.
What are your students, are they behaving? Are they talking differently as their parents are called up? Of course, it has to make a difference.
And you're right, Neil. It's exactly that. It's that the children that we're seeing on campus, and we're a school of a K-5 with about 500 students, and we have close to 50% of our students whose parents have been deployed. And because of those high numbers, we're feeling it on campus through our children's eyes.
What do they do? Do they behave differently?
What we're finding is that most of the behavior that we're seeing on campus on a day-to-day basis is not necessarily where they're physically acting out, but we're seeing the complete opposite, where the children who were the real lively ones, real ones who had great peer relationships and were quite talkative have all of a sudden become very quiet and introverted.
Is there anything the school can do to help them?
Well, the most important thing in what we're asking our staff to do is to know your children in your classrooms, so that when these differences appear, that we can begin to explore and investigate as to the reasons why. When we have our counseling sessions on base here at the school site, that many times they come into those sessions because parents are calling us and telling us, hey, my husband just deployed or my wife just deployed. Students are coming to school saying, my dad left in the middle of the night and he's gone. Or teachers are telling us, you know, there's something not right about Johnny. All of a sudden, he's not as talkative anymore. So those are some of the tall tale signs that we're looking and knowing who the children are on a day-to-day basis and the differences that we are seeing in them.
Have you had the need to bring extra counselors in?
Very much so, Neil. As I say, with a school of 500, which isn't a very big school in California, that the number of students needing support is close to about 200 to 250 students. Well, we have one psychologist a day and a half and then a two-day psychologist intern, and there's no way that we can handle those numbers. So what we did is we appealed to the base family services here at Camp Pendleton. And under the Division of Intervention and Prevention, they were able to send out five counselors that we have meeting with students 4 days a week here at Santa Margarita. And that's helped tremendously.
Do you have any advice to the parents of the parent who might be left behind to cope with a kid whose other parent has gone off?
Well, one of the things is to make sure, as we've asked our parent community to do, and that is to talk to the school. Let us know what's going on. In our newsletters that we've sent to them, we've said, if there are changes due to deployment in your home, let us know, because we can work with you. And there are several things that we can work. Counseling is only one of them. The second thing that we've asked parents to do, because we've had some questions about that, and that is the issue of homework. Can we put homework aside is what they're asking us. And we're telling them no, to try and maintain a routine. That's very important in the home, because that's what we're trying to do at the school site, is to maintain a routine for the children that they're familiar with, that they get a sense of belonging, and that they understand, because in their home life, things are changing. Things are changing day to day, and oftentimes without them understanding why.
Have you had any situations where both of a child's parents have been called up?
We have a couple of students, one who I just had lunch with. We, as I said, we do some other things beyond deployment, Neil. And one of them is that once a week I help to identify students to have lunch with, and I bring them into my office, and we just have lunch together to talk and to see what's going on. And it's through that last week that I discovered that one of our students, both his mother and father are deployed in different regions, and he's currently being supervised at home through his grandfather.
They have
They are out there, but that is very atypical in our school setting.
Principal Gomez, thanks very much for being with us. We know, obviously, you're real busy. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Frank Gomez is the principal of Santa Margarita Elementary School on Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California. Meredith Leyva, we want to thank you as well. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Meredith Leyva is the founder of SyncHouse.com. That's spelled CINC House.com, and she spoke with us on the line from Panama City, Florida. Here are the stories that NPR News is following today. From London, Sylvia Pagioli reports that Britain has set out a list of conditions to Iraq for disarmament as Prime Minister Blair tries to shore up support in Parliament. And by the way, later on this program, you can hear from the Spanish foreign minister. Spain has been a co-sponsor of the Anglo-American resolution in the United States in the UN Security Council. Also, Michelle Norris speaks to Serbian journalist about the assassination of Serbia's Prime Minister Zoran Djindjic. Those stories and more coming up later today on All Things Considered. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.